Hey there, welcome back. See what's going on, Mud's Touch Man. Thanks for 360, about 360k, even if it's just law enforcement, but you know what they say, even the piggies have to learn something. Oink oink. Once in a while. Jury gets evidence to convict Trump right away.
Inflammation almost prevented me from walking my daughter down the aisle. It was either sit and watch life from the sidelines or turn my body into a...
Michael Popak, and it's time for Legal AF After Dark, the New York trial against Donald Trump criminal trial that's going on right now, just finished week two. We talk about on Legal AF what happened, how well the prosecution must feel they're doing with their first three witnesses already under their belt after opening statements. We talk about what the impact of the jury is of the evidence at Donald Trump's antics. And we break it all down for you from the perspective of trial lawyers operate in that very courtroom and courthouse. Legal AF, take a listen.
Let's talk about everything that happened in the Manhattan District Attorney criminal case against Donald Trump this week. Recall, it's for Donald Trump's falsification of business records to interfere with the 2016 election.
Scheiße. Stormy Daniel, hush money case.
In election, three witnesses testified this week. That's an image of Donald Trump in the court. You see Justice Mershon, the judge who's presiding over the case. In that photo, you see on Donald Trump's left, Todd Blanche, who gave the opening. You see Emile Bove on Donald Trump's right. There you see David Pecker, one of the witnesses who testified, the most compelling witness thus far. That's Trump. And again, Emile Bove, who did the cross-exam of David Pecker. Each day, we've been creating a scorecard here of the events taking place on each day of trial. We might as well start with the last day of the second week of the Trump trial, which was day eight. David Pecker, the former head of AMI, which owned the National Enquirer, finished his testimony. We then heard from Ronna Graff. Ronna Graff, Donald Trump, or the Trump Organization's personal assistant for many decades. Then you had Gary Farrow, a banker who was familiar with some of the shell companies that Cohen was setting up to make some of these payments. And then more of Donald Trump whining how cold he is in the courtroom. And multiple observers talked about how Donald Trump would continue to fall asleep near REM's
farting and sharding, but he's still tied with Biden.
I worked in that courthouse for 30 years. It is a government building. I've never heard people whine about the temperature. I mean, sure, the building may be cold. It's a government building, but that's just life. That's what it means when you don't sit on a golden toilet your whole life. Maybe you don't get the temperature that you like, but this whining, this complete whining.
I like Mershon's comment to him. He said, "You got two choices, Mr. Trump. You can either be boiling hot or you can be freezing cold. That's it. It's binary in this courtroom. So we chose cold, and you can adjust accordingly."
Well, boiling hot witness, and David Pecker for sure, certainly exceeded my expectations as well of what a credible historian he was on the facts, talking about the deal he made with Donald Trump, multiple in-person meetings with Donald Trump, where Trump thanked him for making the hush money payments, thanked him for handling the McDougal situation, paying off Karen McDougal, who Trump had a sexual relationship with while Melania was pregnant and had given birth, thanking him for handling the doorman situation where they paid off a Trump Tower doorman who ended up not having credible info, but they thought he did at first, inviting Pecker to the White House, holding a thank you dinner for him, knowing that the cast of characters like Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Hope Hicks, while they were in the White House, were still involved in trying to extend some of these hush money agreements and non-disclosure agreements. We heard testimony from Pecker about what Trump was saying about Michael Cohen. Trump saying, you know, don't worry about it. I'm going to take care of Michael Cohen for handling the other hush money payments that were made. So, you know, I thought it was a very kind of credible testimony. But Popak, if you can break down your observations from week one, before we go into like the contempt hearing and things like that, just the three witnesses, what'd you make of it? What'd you make of the defense strategy? And where do you think we are right now? If you were evaluating the jury, where do you think they are? Take it away.
I'll start with that one. The prosecution is way up on points. The jury, as I've said before in other hot takes, jury science tells us that juries make decisions very quickly. It doesn't matter how long your trial is, 6, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 6 months. Juries make rapid decisions about who they trust, both as advocates and as witnesses and as a case, and who they don't. Meaning after the opening statements, which I thought went well for the prosecution, did not as well for Todd Blanche. I thought his chuckling and laughing and being insincere about the quote-unquote conspiracy and in other ways he was trying to show his disdain actually would have backfired for this jury. And then I think that the perfect roadmap witness, you and I talked about it last week, you and I had a little bit of a debate about what the first witness would be. I said it's going to be powerful, it's going to be a roadmap type witness, and I said it may be Pecker. So Pecker, the reason I thought it was going to be him is he's the only person that Donald Trump, he spent so much time and energy going after Michael Cohen. And I always thought Michael Cohen is what we call a sandwich witness. He's in the middle somewhere. He's down the road. His testimony has been reinforced and bolstered by numerous documentary witnesses and testimonial witnesses and roadmap witnesses. But if you have anything close to a roadmap witness, you have to put it on first because you have the jury's rapt attention after the opening statements. And now you don't want to waste that reservoir of goodwill and energy that you have by starting with, you know, bringing on, you know, Ronna Graff and talk about, you know, the fact that Donald Trump has Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal in his Rolodex. I mean, that's like, okay, that's interesting. And yes, they'll tie it together. She served another purpose. I'm going to talk about Ronna Graff in a minute. But if you can start off with somebody that maybe doesn't have every page of the hymnal, but has a lot of it, you know, then that's what you use. And Pecker, there's only three people that are in the Trump Tower conspiracy, the TTC, that the prosecution presented in their opening statement. One's called Donald Trump, one's called David Pecker, and one's called Michael Cohen. And we know what Cohen and Pecker are going to say. And who cares what Trump says after that? He gets outvoted in front of the jury, 2-3, about those fateful meetings in which the conspiracy was established for the catch and kill program, and everybody's role was established. What role Michael Cohen was going to have in terms of calling on behalf of Trump to encourage terrible stories to be placed in the National Enquirer, not a legitimate media outlet, one that practices, in David Pecker's words, checkbook journalism, you know, and published many things on behalf of Donald Trump, not because it benefited America Media Group or the National Enquirer, but only because it was consistent with this conspiracy agreement that was created at Trump Tower. So Pecker was perfect, and he got to tell the story about the first two of the three targets, I almost said victims, of the catch and kill program. You know, Sajudin, the doorman, with his out of wedlock child story about Donald Trump. That was their test run. That was $30,000 payment by David Pecker, killed the story, didn't see the light of day. Second was Karen McDougal. David Pecker testified at length about it. In ways that it's almost been, I wasn't shocked by his testimony. We knew from what he was involved with that where the time. Actually, nothing that he said shocked me. What shocked me is how cordial and friendly he was to the lawyer who was asking questions for the prosecutor. It was almost like they're having a cup of coffee and having a conversation, which is exactly what you and I love when we're doing a deposition or an examination in court. This was not pulling teeth. Maybe because there's a non-prosecution or deferred prosecution that he's still sort of subject to, related to his prior bad acts with the prosecutors. But in any event, he was just jovial. He was happy. You never heard about David Pecker out of Donald Trump's mouth. He spent all of his resources, his lawyer, him on social media, bashing Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen, Michael Cohen, Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen is not the only witness in this case. He's a sandwich witness that's going to come much, much later. Text messages, emails, check report, check runs, business records. That's what's going to hang Donald Trump. Recorded conversations that Michael Cohen took with Donald Trump, which he's heard, and the jury will hear it. That's going to be a shocking day when that happens. David Pecker did great for the prosecution because he established everything they needed in one witness's mouth. The conspiracy, the roles in the conspiracy, the checks that were written, why Pecker didn't handle Stormy Daniels because he didn't get paid for Karen McDougal, how upset Michael Cohen was, and that is what. If it wasn't for that falling out on that issue about payment to the target, then there possibly would not be a hush money cover-up felony here, because it would have been coming out of David Pecker's bank account at National Enquirer directly to sign an NDA directly. But because he wouldn't do it anymore, because he didn't get paid the $150,000 that he had laid out for Karen McDougal, he wasn't going to do it again for Stormy Daniels, especially he said he didn't want to be involved with a porn star. I guess Playboy Playmate was okay. So Michael Cohen was upset, but Michael Cohen had to report back to the boss that we're going to have to do it, which is where the audio recording is going to come in later. The other advantage to David Pecker is that he reinforces and corroborates Michael Cohen before Michael Cohen even takes the stand. And we've all acknowledged, and both sides have acknowledged, that Michael, as a witness in this case, I'm not talking about him as a podcaster on the network, as a witness in this case is, well, I'll paraphrase the prosecutor, complicated. Slightly compromised, got some issues. You got to acknowledge it up front. Otherwise, the jury's going to, you know, otherwise you give the narrative over to the defense. So they both talked about Michael Cohen. But by the time Michael Cohen takes the stand, much of what he's going to testify to has already been established in the court of law. So that's another advantage of David Pecker. He helps Michael Cohen down the road on key facts. Next witness, Ronna Graff. Ronna's been with Donald Trump for 35 years. She is referred to as his right-hand man, right-hand person, or Trump whisperer. Everybody knows if you wanted to get to Trump, you got to get to Ronna. She didn't want to be there. She acknowledged she didn't want to testify, which made her testimony even more powerful in front of the jury because she had to give it up, but she really didn't want to be there. And what did she establish? She introduced a new witness that'll be coming down the road, who is an executive assistant, who's going to be testifying later. So that name was mentioned a lot. Madeline, the name will come to me in a minute. So they talked about her training Madeline and Madeline's role working for Donald Trump. Why? Because that's a witness that's coming down the road, and they want the jury to hear that, to ring the bell on that. That's one. Two, they wanted to establish that in the Trump Organization database was the phone numbers and contact information for Stormy and Karen McDougal. Yeah, that's normal. You normally have a Playboy Playmate, a porn star, in your database for phone numbers, for contacts. And she established in advance of Stormy Daniels' arrival as a witness, because she's testifying, that she did see or hear that Stormy Daniels was in Trump Tower for a meeting with Donald Trump, she presumed for the Celebrity Apprentice, which matches up perfectly with Stormy Daniels' future testimony, because we know what that is from her documentary, that he, Trump, dangled the opportunity of Celebrity Apprentice as a carrot to try to get Stormy Daniels' pants. I mean, there's no other way to put it. So that is another confirming factor. So even though Ronna paled by comparison to a witness like David Pecker, she served an important purpose, and that will pay dividends later on for the prosecution as they bring in new witnesses. And then the jury will go, aha, that's why we talked about Madeline, the executive assistant. That's why we talked about the cell phone numbers and what's in the database. That's why we talked about, you know, these other items. And then you had the sort of boring witness, because they only had like an hour, so they wanted to shove one more witness in. So they brought the First Republic Bank former banker in to talk about Michael Cohen, his banking, the different shell companies that Michael used, and how he took out a loan. I guess that's where that was going. Took out a loan that was ultimately used for the hush money for Stormy Daniels. I learned something new. Michael Cohen and I bank at the same bank, at the same branch. That was also interesting. I didn't have that particular banker. So it was a masterful presentation by the prosecution. It was almost a master's class on how to present all of your witnesses, some that are super exciting and interesting and riveting, and others that you need to establish basic information in order to pay dividends later on and to bolster Michael Cohen's testimony. That's not coming next week, by the way. I don't know when exactly Michael Cohen is testifying, because now he's going on lockdown. He won't speak about it until his trial, until he testifies. But I don't think it's next week, Ben. And I want to hear from you. I think it's going to be more corroborating, bolstering of people like Michael, and then they bring Michael in as if it's like a fait accompli about his testimony and the rest.
I think Michael would either go in 2 weeks, or I don't think he'll leave. I agree. To the extent he goes next week, I think it'll be the end of next week. A reminder, there's no court on Monday, so that only really gives what, Tuesday, Wednesday's dark, Thursday, Friday. That gives 3 days of testimony, so I don't see Michael going that week. Then the next week, week four, I could imagine Cohen going, if anything, towards the end. If I was betting, I would say he's probably a week five testimony.
Totally late, agree with you.
You know, late May.
Do you agree that I call him a sandwich witness? You don't lead or end with him, recency and primacy. You stick him sort of in the middle after this bolstering. That's why I agree with you. You don't think they end with Michael Cohen, right?
No, they won't end with Michael Cohen. They'll put him, I think, 3/4 of the way done. I don't think they'll put him directly 50%. I think they'll put him like 70%, through it. And then they'll probably have, four or five, more witnesses to kind of further corroborate after that. That would be my suspicion.
But they are thinking, we'll just talk trial strategy here for a minute, and we do more of this, of course, on our Patreon. We're doing a lot of that now. They are thinking, this isn't random. I want people, nothing is random about the presentation of a trial by either team. The order of operation, the order of witnesses. Now, sometimes you have to, in the fog of war, in the fog of litigation, the best laid plans go, poof. Or as Mike Tyson used to say, everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the face. And sometimes you get punched in the face during the trial and you got to adjust. Oh, wait a minute. We got to move up a witness here because something's happened. But assuming that, you do map out, you and I, when we do trials, we map out every week and every day. So they know, the prosecution knows, even though you and I are doing a little bit of kibitzing here, they know who they want to end the trial with. And for what reason they want to do that before the jury goes off and deliberate. It'll be a powerful witness. It'll be a bookend to Pecker. I'm not sure who exactly that is. I agree with you. It's not Cohen. I don't even think it's Stormy Daniels. It'll be somebody else we haven't thought of yet as we get going closer to end with. And then everybody else sort of sequences in a way, sometimes in order. Sometimes you're able to, we did checks, so let's do bank accounts and do the other side of the transaction. Or sometimes not. It also depends on witness availability. And who's actually available at any moment. But there is a storyboard that the prosecutors who have the case right now are following in the movie that they're presenting to this jury. And so far, I got to tell you, as producers and directors, they got to be thrilled with the rushes so far. Because right now, you could, if anybody had told the prosecutors that Pecker would go as well as he did, it would be cross-examined as weakly as he was by the defense, and same thing with Rana. I would say I'll take it in a heartbeat. Welcome back. That was Legal AF. It's a podcast. We do it on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, where myself and another co-anchor, sometimes it's Ben Mycelis, sometimes it's Karen Freeman Agnifilo, we break it all down for you. We give it to you from the intersection of law and politics and from our vast experience as trial lawyers, either former prosecutors or current defense lawyers in these very courtrooms. If you know everything you need to know about Legal AF, we really appreciate you being part of our audience. But take that clip. You can be part of our marketing department if we don't have one. Send it off to friends and family, people in your life, and say, hey, that's Legal AF. I really enjoy this show. Why don't you think about joining them? 10-minute commitment. It's great. Maybe you missed Legal AF. You missed that particular clip, but that's another reason we do Legal AF After Dark. If you don't know what I'm talking about, but you find that clip intriguing, I invite you to join our audience. Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on this YouTube channel right here, Midas Touch, and then on audio podcast platforms of your choice. So until my next hot take, until my next Legal AF, this is Michael Popak reporting. Eerie, eerie, Legal AF Law Breakdown is now in session. Go beyond the headlines and get a deep dive into the important legal concepts you need to know and we discuss every day on Legal AF. Exclusive content you won't find anywhere else, all for the price of a couple of cups of coffee. Join us at patreon.com/legalaf. That's patreon.com/legalaf.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.